Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, December 29th. I'm Ray Graff with the new year on the horizon. It's happy hour here on Food Friday, and we're going to delve into the wonderful world of cocktails, spirits, and champagne. And we have just the man for that, a connoisseur of liquid intelligence, John Fisher of the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, is here to take your calls about the bubbly and more. And he's quite particular about what bubbly we talk about. And we'll talk all about that. If you have a question about a drink, I think last time on the show we had Singapore Slings, which were fantastic. Who knows what John Fisher is brewing up for us? If you have a question about drinks, 800-348-2551. Our celebrity drinker Joe Donahue just walked in. It'll be quite a show coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. New Year's Eve is only days away by my calculation, and I just calculated now. Many people like to watch the ball drop with a drink in hand, or a drink drop with, no. Here on this Food Friday to help you decide which cocktails or champagne to serve or enjoy is John Fisher. He's a professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. If you have a question about spirits, cocktails, champagne, this is the guy who will answer the question in a very, very sort of pleasant, not snobby way, generally. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Also with us today is our drink taster, celebrity in his own right, Joe Donahue. And you can email the program if you wish as well, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. John and Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for letting me be a part of this.
It sounds so sincere.
Yeah, I did. Well, I've been working on that. It's one of my resolutions for 2018, attempt to be sincere. So what's new, John Fisher?
Nothing. You know, end of Christmas break for the culinary. We're going back on Tuesday to start classes. We had a graduation right before vacation started. Anthony Bourdain was the graduation speaker.
I see.
I saw the pictures of that. It looked great.
He's very tall and very skinny. And I was the faculty speaker. I was chosen by the senior class to be their representative and to make a little speech of my own.
I find it interesting that the only descriptors that you have of him are tall and skinny. As we want to know, is he a nice guy? Is he approachable? Was he nice to the students? Was he nice to you?
He was very tall and very skinny.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And what was your speech about?
I actually talked about how the fact that I'm a cook inside, deep down, being a graduate from the culinary,
yeah,
and having cooked professionally a little bit, but really learning how to cook so I could be a better front of the house and beverage person.
Mm.
So I spent 2 years learning how to cook, even though I didn't plan on becoming a cook.
Oh, well,
and
there you go.
1986 to 1988.
How many graduates?
Oh, I think there were about 130 in this class.
Oh,
we have three
great
graduations a year because we have a trimester with no significant summer breaks. We have 3 weeks off in the summer, but for anybody from the restaurant business, 3 weeks off in a row is just a little piece of heaven.
Or radio business, yes. for that matter. And before we get going with our New Year's Eve drinks and champagne and such, just a quick update on the brewery. How are we doing?
Brewery is doing great. Hutch Kugelman is our head brewer, and he is a really talented brewer and a great teaching partner because he teaches the labs in the brewery. I teach the lectures in the classroom. And our most recent class project beer, we do one every semester where the students propose a beer style. We give them five to choose from. And they write a recipe, they do research, they come up with, they talk about the famous brands, and then some names for the beers as well. The class votes on what the favorite one of the five is, and that beer gets made and is served at graduation.
Okay.
So this one is a triple, a Belgian triple, made with Crown Maple syrup. Crown Maple is a big donor to the school, and mm-hmm. they collaborated with us on it. So it's a 9.3% alcohol,
wow,
blonde beer with fairly high, fairly high carbonation. So it hides alcohol a little bit, but it is, it's a little bit of a beast, but you can't really, it doesn't, It goes down pretty easy. And it's called Triple Crown.
Triple Crown.
Because it's a triple and crown maple syrup.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Like the horses.
Right.
Yeah. Or baseball.
Or baseball, yeah. Indeed. So we'll talk about New Year's Eve here today. And for many, it's going out. And I think the young people do that. I stay home.
I don't.
I, watch TV and fall asleep before midnight. That's my New Year's Eve.
You know, 30-some-odd years in the restaurant business, I do not go out New Year's Eve. It's amateur night. Things happen.
Amateur.
No, it truly is.
No, I know. I hear that. So my birthday is on New Year's Eve, and I never go out for my birthday because I don't. You don't want to be out. And even as lovely as it is to think that every place is having a party for you, they're not.
No. My uncle was born there Memorial Day, and until he was about 12, he thought the parade was for him.
Well, sure, absolutely.
And you're too famous to go out now, right?
No, I just stay home.
Yeah.
Order in.
Watch the Ernie Kovacs DVDs.
That's you're good to right. go. Exactly right.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And we'll get to the phones in a moment. But first, what are we brewing up here, John Fisher?
Well, first, I'm going to open this bottle carefully, which is the way you always should open this
bottle.
You
open a bottle of bubbly here.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, it's not champagne. Here we go.
Okay. Oh, you know what that reminds me of? It didn't sound like anything.
No.
No, I'm not going to.
I have a couple of ideas. Anyway, this is a sparkling wine from France. It's from
an anticlimactic pop.
He made a great joke about the pop of the champagne earlier before the show, which I was trying to sneak in here to get him to do the joke.
But
it didn't make the sound.
No.
I'm going to work clean today.
Okay.
So this is from Limoux. It is a Cremant, Limoux, Limoux.
So not a champagne.
So it's not champagne. The trick is that all champagne is sparkling wine. Not all sparkling wines are champagne.
Right.
To be called champagne, by law, at least in the EU, it has to be made in champagne using the method, it's called the traditional method, when it's not made in champagne. It's called the method champenoise if it's from champagne.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it is actually fermented for a second time in the bottle.
Yeah.
And that bottle is the bottle that the wine was made in originally.
Right.
So by law, it has to be in the bottle that it was made in. There are a lot of great wines that are made with the same method that cost a lot less than real champagne. And frankly, real champagne is a bit of a Teflon because they can get so much more money for it because it's called champagne.
Yes.
There are some champagnes that are literally the best sparkling wines on the planet.
No.
But
you have to pay a lot.
They're somewhat – well, you have to pay a lot, but also you have to look for them. And there are – I won't name any brands that I think of negatively, but there are some that just are okay. But there are wines that cost half as much that are at least half again as good.
What about Champale?
Champale, is that up there with Colt 45, I think? Isn't it the same kind of?
You guys don't remember
you.
You don't remember Champale.
I remember. I never had it.
Oh, really?
I never had Champale.
Oh.
It was not a favorite at the Fisher household.
I don't think it was a favorite at anybody's household, but it was whatever you could get your hands on.
When I was, growing up, it was either the cold duck or it was the Champale.
Cold duck I've had.
Yeah, sure.
So do you mind if I ask a question, Ray?
I'm sorry, are you talking to me?
Yeah, can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
So when you, how did we get to this idea of incorporating champagne into our New Year's celebrations?
I have no idea.
Okay, great.
Only
take a second, right? Don't worry.
Thank you, Hamilton Burger. Thank you.
All I can think of is that it has been reserved for celebratory events for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, the czars of Russia drank it, and it was Veuve Clicquot was one of the first champagnes that was made and sent to the czars of Russia. Cristal by Louis Roederer was invented essentially for the czar as well. That's why it was. That's why it's in a clear bottle, because it was actually the Veuve Clicquot, the widow Clicquot, who invented the disgorging method, which is how you make champagne clear, because it is carbonated with yeast in the bottle. They take the bottle, and this is the champagne method, the traditional method, and after they add a dosage of a little bit of sugar and the yeast, they put a literally a soda bottle cap on top of it, and then they put it in the cellar And it sits there for at least 2 to 3 years. It can sit there for up to 8, 9, 10 years. And when they're getting ready to bottle it, they take the bottle and they riddle it. And riddling is turning the bottle and slowly going from horizontal to near vertical with the cork facing down. And as they're turning it quickly, it kind of scooches that little puddle of dead yeast cells en masse to a new spot. They do it every day, and eventually it moves its way into the neck of the bottle. They then take that bottle, they put it into a brine and ice solution and freeze the neck, the contents of the
neck. You're kidding me.
They take that bottle and pop the soda cap off. The pressure shoots this frozen plug of yeast and wine out the end. They quickly stop it so they don't lose too much more wine. They pour in a little bit more wine. They put the cork, the mushroom cork, and the wire cage around it, and that's how you get
I'll be darned.
Clear champagne. That's why champagne's expensive.
Well, that seems like a lot of work.
It's a ton of work, and that's why I get angry about Prosecco being the same price as champagne method wine, because Prosecco is made in a frigging tank called the Charmat process.
Thank
they
you for saying
frigging.
Yes,
there you go. And it's not what I was thinking.
I understand.
But it is, because of the way it's made in this big tank, the bubbles are much bigger because it's not under as concentrated a pressure. One of the signs of quality in champagne and sparkling wine is how small the bubbles are. And part of that is how dissolved the CO2 is in it. The longer it ages, the smaller the bubbles get. So Prosecco, with its big, you know, wine geeks will make fun of Prosecco by saying, oh, look at those big soda pop bubbles. Mm. You know, it's like making fun of the Prosecco in the glass, you silly wine.
But still, if you're going to make an Aperol Spritz, you want the Prosecco,
You need Prosecco because that's the correct wine to use for it. But, you know, Sarah just got back from Italy where you drink Prosecco, and it's 3-4 euros a bottle. They drink it from juice glasses, and it's not a serious beverage.
Yeah.
You drink it casually. And what has happened in wine stores and restaurants around the United States is that Americans have started equating Prosecco with sparkling wines made in the champagne method.
John Fisher is our guest. It is a Food Friday. We talk about spirits and cocktails and champagne and whatnot here on a Food Friday. 800-348-2551, the number. Oh, I'm thirsty. I think we'll get to some calls and we'll have a drink in a moment.
Support for WMT comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends, specialty salt box gift sets for holiday gifting, rollingrocksalt.com for live events and details. Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. Family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats. Home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days. Pekarsky's.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. Nine Pin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Wishing WMC listeners happy holidays. NinePinCider.com. And Convino Wine Bar, Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 70 wines by the glass and a full menu from afternoon snack through nightcap. Live music Sundays and Mondays. Thorns Marketplace, ConvinoWineBar.com.
Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. We talk spirits and cocktails and such with John Fisher of the Culinary Institute. Our number is 800-348-2551. Joe Donahue is here as well. And we have a code. If there is a boozing show, we tend to try to invite each other in. Joe's birthday is Sunday. Joe's big 5-0. Is Sunday.
Wow.
So let's do a little toast to Joe. Well,
thank you very
Joe,
much.
You're at the peak of your powers right now.
It's all downhill.
It is downhill from here.
Well, thank you.
Cheers to you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
That's good, but the bubbles are too big. Much too big.
Well, this is a Cremant. So this is a less expensive sparkling wine. And first of all, you should drink more sparkling wine at least once a week, because there is a lot of affordable sparkling wine Like I said, I love Prosecco when
it's... I like that you're prescribing that. Once a week, please. Do that sure. Once a week.
Whether you need it or not.
Yes.
It is, there's a lot of really affordable, good sparkling wine. Prosecco, when it's affordably, when it's appropriately priced, is a fine option as well. But it's just, you know, it's great with food. Sparkling wine tends to be really high in acid. Acid is great for food. The bubbles hide the acidity somehow. I don't know chemically how it works, but something about the bubbles. Let me put it this way: you take a glass, you drink a glass of champagne or sparkling wine. You go back. You forgot about your glass. It's the end of the party. You go grab it. You take a sip of it when it's flat, and you are almost always alarmed at how sour it is.
Yeah.
So it's very high in acid, which is great for food. Also, the bubbles wash away fat and saltiness. So there's nothing better for fried food than sparkling wine.
I like it with a pepperoni pizza as well.
It's great. It's great with everything.
And all, but I like martinis with a pepperoni pizza too.
That's interesting.
All right, we're gonna go to the phones in a moment here, but let's take a quick email. This one came in from Adrian in New Paltz. Ask the guests. That's you too, Joe. So get ready to answer about Pimm's Number One Cup, a British classic, kind of like Southern Comfort. I'm assuming then there is a Pimm's Number Two Cup, but let's not go into that right now. We used to do it mixed with tart red tart cherry juice over in Michigan. Pineapple juice, also delectable. Pimm's Number One Cup.
There were about 12 Pimm's cups.
Okay.
Mr. Pimm made these cocktail bases, essentially, kind of like some of the stuff that I've brought to you, the bitter milk cocktail bases. And it was based on gin.
Yeah.
And the traditional way of serving it is with lemon-lime soda, not an American version, so not like 7-Up or Sprite, which are much sweeter than the European, what they call lemonade over there. So it's made with a fairly tart lemon soda and garnished traditionally with a piece of cucumber.
Interesting. That sounds good.
And a lemon twist. It's really refreshing.
Which number Pimm do you like best?
There's only one now. Pimm's Number One Cup. It's the only one that's still made.
One that... Lasted.
And then a follow-up here from Adrian. Also, I think I can answer this. Also, please define rock and rye. Anything to do with rye whiskey? And it's rock,
rock sugar.
Candy, right?
Rock candy is a sweetener.
So in the old Western days, they would do that? A little rye, dump some...
I don't know the history of rock and rye. It is definitely like a 50s thing.
Yeah.
Like our parents used to drink, you know, the B&B and Benedictine. And there was always a bottle of Peter Cherry Herring around. Just like a lot of other spirits, though, it has come back because of the cocktail craze.
You know, I still crave the Singapore Sling you made the last time. I have not gotten around to going through the 17 different ingredients and the laborious process of making it, but I want to.
It's also not a winter drink, necessarily. I mean, we're going to be, you know, in a minute, we're going to be having a little gin as part of a different cocktail. But Singapore Sling is a juicy, refreshing drink with surprising complexity.
How about a Harvey Wallbanger?
That's a bit of an embarrassment.
To who?
The history of this
the
is
person
a,
who invented
a lot
it.
Of lot of mythology behind this that's not true, apparently.
Oh, well, it exists because a Hublin salesman had too much Galliano in stock and just added Galliano to a screwdriver.
Yeah.
So this is one of those 70s cocktails that was invented to sell more something.
So that would be vodka, Galliano,
orange juice, Galliano. That's it.
And you like that, though?
There
it's
you go.
Good.
It's surprisingly tasty, but it is a little embarrassing to drink.
What about a zombie?
Zombie is a
rum.
Zombie is several rums. Is a classic tiki cocktail.
Yeah.
Although it will hurt you.
Yeah.
If you have too many of them. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Peter in Windsor, Mass. Peter, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Yeah, howdy. I've noticed that virtually every bar I go to has a version of Moscow Mule. What's with the sudden popularity? And how come the copper cup? It's always in the copper cup.
Interesting. Well, we know Russia's in, but John.
Well, the Moscow Mule is another cocktail that came about because of product lying around. There was a Hublin salesperson in San Francisco who was sitting on cases and cases of Smirnoff vodka. There was a British expat hotel owner in San Francisco who also had a stake in a ginger beer company back home, and he wanted to unload some ginger beer. The copper cup is still a little bit of a mystery. There must have been some cases of them lying around the basement of the hotel or something.
Yeah.
But it turned into a very popular cocktail because the they pushed it. Hugh Blind spent a lot of money on marketing, and they would shove Moscow Mules in those copper cups into movie stars' hands when there was press around. And so you'd see your favorite movie star drinking the Moscow Mule. And so this is about when star power started having – well, stars started having power.
All right. There you go, Peter. Thanks for the call. Well, ginger beer is good with
very
almost
tasty.
Anything.
Well, it is. I was just at a Smirnoff party that was hosted by Smirnoff, and that's what they had everybody with the – copper cups and the mugs.
It's a really simple drink. I mean, all it is vodka and ginger beer with a piece of lime.
Yeah, you know? And it's tasty. They had little red and white straws, too, to kind of suck it up with.
Yeah, that I don't think is part of the history.
No.
It might be. I don't know.
I don't know. He may be imagining things. Remember, he's almost 50.
No, I have a picture.
Let's go to Mary in LaGrangeville. Mary, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Here's a question for all of you.
All right.
That I assume you're going to have a good answer for.
Okay.
I have several friends who do not imbibe in alcohol, and those numbers are growing. So when I'm entertaining, I want to have something really nice for my friends who aren't going to be drinking wine or champagne. And can you recommend any really excellent non-alcoholic wines?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I'm really
beer.
Not. I'm not an expert in non-alcoholic beverages. There are a lot of people call them mocktails. So there are a lot of articles on them. You can search online for them. There are probably a couple of good books on them. It's not my wheelhouse, but I would suggest that most non-alcoholic so-called wines and beers are not really very good. You can make some really interesting drinks and cocktails and non-alcoholic cocktails by using bitters, but most bitters have some alcohol in them. So if they are really, if they don't drink any alcohol at all, you can't do that. And frankly, so-called non-alcoholic beer has about 0.5% of alcohol in it.
Does it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a
federal standard as to what you can call non-alcoholic beer, and there is alcohol in most of them.
Well, I'll be darned. So there's really no clear-cut answer.
Not really. There's a Sauter Home product called Free, F-R-E, with a long E sign over it. But I don't find that any of those so-called non-alcoholic alcohol-based drinks are great.
Well, then what would you suggest for Mary? Something a little fancier than a glass of V8, but...
Well, you can make, you can make a Virgin Mary.
There you go.
You know, there are a lot of interesting fruit juices out. Meyer Lemon is a really wonderful fruit juice to make that so-called non-alcoholic cocktail out of. But I would search the interwebs.
Okay. Hey, Mary, good luck.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year.
And to you. And what are you shaking up there, John Fisher?
I'm making us a couple of French 75s.
French 75s. Now, Joe, you and I had a French 75 a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. We did.
It is named after an artillery gun. That was, I guess it probably was 75 caliber, and it was a gun that pretty much won World War II.
Mm.
And
World War I or World War II?
I think it was World War II.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was World War II. But it was famed for its power and its effectiveness, and so that's what this cocktail does as well.
Okay.
And it is a combination of gin, lemon, simple syrup, and sparkling wine. So get a little bit of each of those in there.
Okay.
And this is something that I like serving at holiday time, partly because it's stronger than that glass of champagne or sparkling wine, but it's still lower in alcohol than a straight martini.
Right. Okay, and it looks good.
Straight up, no ice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
All right. I give you Joe's birthday Sunday.
You happy
much.
Birthday.
Good
yeah,
luck,
thank
Joe.
You very much.
Kanpai.
I like that.
That is such a good drink.
That is.
Man, that's great. And you made that with the same sparkling wine that we had earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four Dole sparkling wine. This stuff would be probably 12, 15 bucks a bottle.
Let's go over to Niall in High Falls. You're on.
Hi there. I just wanted to add a couple quick comments. Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I find for the last couple of years that when I'm serving or drinking sparkling wines, I favor Pet Nats from the Loire Valley or California.
Mm-hmm.
Usually a Chenin Blanc or Gamay or Groyot or something like that. And I just wanted to close with a couple quick comments. The French Cannon in question is from the late 1800s.
Okay.
And my favorite booze with pizza is Johnny Walker Red.
Johnny Walker Red with pizza. All right. Well, very good. Thanks a lot for the call. His comments on the bubbly?
Well, the it's a kind of a hipsterish term that's being used a lot. This pet nat, it means pétillant naturel, and pétillance is the bubbles in the wine, and it happens naturally in some wines that are made in a more organic way.
Okay.
They are a little bit of the it wine of the moment.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
No, it isn't. I'm not so sure that it's a trend that has legs. But it is something that is definitely a hot item in a lot of hot restaurants today.
Okay.
I have a quick question in regards to the French 75 that we're drinking, which is amazing.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Similar, although dissimilar, to a gimlet, correct?
Well,
much sweeter than a gimlet, I think.
Yeah.
It's a true gimlet
is wine, right?
is gin and Rose's lime juice.
Yes.
It is. You'll find some bartenders who are serious about their craft but don't know a lot yet, saying that they only make gimlets with fresh lime juice.
Oh, no.
That's not a gimlet. Yeah. That's half of a gin ricky, a lime ricky, which is then add some soda and you have a lime ricky. But a true gimlet is made with Rose's lime juice, which was a product originally created for the British Navy to fight scurvy.
Sure.
And of course, the thing about Rose's lime juice is it's.
I'm just fighting scurvy. That's why I'm drinking this.
Always a good excuse. Rose's lime juice is a high quality product, but most of the stuff you find in the store is way too old and oxidized. If it's brown in that bottle, don't even think about buying it. It should be a bright chartreuse green.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that a lot of suppliers will get away with when the bar manager doesn't know that it's supposed to be green. And it does sit around, frankly,
yep.
Because there aren't that many gimlet drinkers. No. But the gimlet is just the booze and Rose's lime juice. So this is distinct in that it is a sparkling wine-based cocktail.
Lovely.
And that's why it's a good one for New Year's Eve, too, because you'll have the wine around.
John Fisher is our guest. It's Food Friday, and we talk cocktails and spirits and bubbly for your New Year's Eve. And let's go over to Peter in line 4. Peter in Middletown, you're on.
Hi. Happy New Year. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Happy New Year.
Question about champagne or a comment. I had been in the business, and I'm happy to report I've had a long relationship with champagne. And
did you
as
escape?
I understand it, actually, to be champagne, that refers to the place and not the wine. That real champagne has to come from the Champagne District around Reims, France.
Correct.
And it has to do also with the chalkiness of the soil that gives the authentic champagne its
the terroir.
Very steely, metallic taste.
Yep. That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, and I just thought I'd mention that. So when there's sparkling wines and then there's champagne, and if you call it champagne, it needs to actually come from champagne. And hope I'm correct on that.
Oh, yeah,
and,
you got it.
Great show.
Thanks a lot, Peter. You got it. You nailed it. You know,
the chalk that's in champagne is the same chalk that goes across the English Channel and becomes the White Cliffs of Dover.
I'll be darned. The West Coast, there are some great bubbly bottles of champagne method. Is there anything that's close to you to a true French champagne?
There are some really good sparkling wines from the United States. Roederer makes a great so-called tête de cuvée, which is what Dom Pérignon and Cristal are. Each champagne house, this is how they're referred to in France, has a top-of-the-line, and it's more expensive. It's always vintage year, which is fairly uncommon in champagne because the year has to be good enough that they can make all the wine from that year. so there's Roederer Estates in California makes a very good one. One that I brought with me, I was going to kind of lie about it at first before I opened it for you, because it looks like champagne. The name Gruet.
Yeah.
And this is a Blanc de Noir, which means it's 100% red grapes. So this is Pinot Noir grapes.
Huh.
In fact, two of the three grapes used to make champagne legally are red grapes. Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay are the three grapes for classic champagne, the only ones allowed by law for champagne. And this is a really tasty Blanc de Noir. Blanc de Noirs are more full-bodied because they're made from red grapes. Even though the wine is technically white, they keep the skins away. They just use the juice.
Oh.
But this is a Blanc de Noir, and it's from the city of Albuquerque.
Hmm.
Albuquerque.
Yeah.
This is from New Mexico.
I like the way you said that.
Yeah,
oh, that's
very
the way
nice.
French
yeah.
people would say Albuquerque. It is from New Mexico, and it is a grand wine.
I'll be darned.
And their wines are, most of them are less than $20, and really, really good.
Well, let's take another call here before the break. John Fisher is our guest, and let's go over to Bill in Rosendale. Bill, you're on.
Oh, thank you.
Hi. I hope you guys all have designated drivers
after
the show.
Only having tiny little tastes here, I must say.
Anyway, years ago when I was in Belgium, it was very popular to serve a drink called avocat, mm-hmm. which you poured from a bottle, but it was somewhere in the consistency between a liquid and a foamy pudding.
Mm-hmm.
You could either eat it have it with these tiny spoons or sip it. I've asked at wine stores, and some of them have heard of it, but nobody seems to be able to get it.
It's an egg-based drink. That
right.
When the Dutch were in the Caribbean, it was made with avocados. And it was actually something that the natives made. The natives made in the Caribbean. It was made with avocados, and they fell in love with it. And when they went back to Holland, they brought avocado trees with them. That did not end very well for the trees. And so I don't know how it happened, but somehow I guess they looked at each other, shrugged, and said, well, eggs are the same shape. and so they make this avocat, A-V-O-C-A-A-T. And
right.
it's like an eggnog type beverage. I haven't had it in decades, so I can't even remember what it tastes like. But it's
great
stuff.
Can you get it here?
Yeah. Yeah, a good liquor store should be able to order it for you. Not that you necessarily should. But I think drink some good local eggnog from a local dairy and put a little bourbon in there.
Bill, thanks for the call. We have to take a break here. John Fisher is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Culligan Water of the Northeast. For over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig. A worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts. BlueHeronDining.com/catering. Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, preparing weddings, showers, reunions, and more at the Curtis House with 3 B&B rooms available, or at the recently renovated barn, Farm to Vase Florals, GloriosaCO.com. And the Egremont Barn, presenting Alt Country and Bluegrass, Miss Tess, and the Talkbacks on Saturday, December 30th. Tickets and information available at TheEgremontBarn.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday, and today it's all about the drinks. John Fisher of the Culinary Institute is here, and we talk cocktails and spirits and champagne. Joe Donahue, our celebrity birthday boy, 800-348-2551, the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And before we get to try this bilious concoction I see here in the glass next to me, here's an email that came in from Charles, who says, great show and a public service. Well, thank you, Charles. Can you recommend a rum-based drink that would be similar to a dry martini, i.e. nothing to dilute the alcohol?
Well, I suppose you could make a martini with rum, with high-quality rum.
Oh, come on, man. Really?
you couldn't call it a martini.
No way.
But, you know, the classic rum cocktail is a daiquiri.
Yeah.
And a daiquiri, all it is good silver rum, simple syrup, and lime juice. And
yeah,
that is a perfect daiquiri. You don't put bananas or strawberries, or don't throw it in the blender. As for a spirit-heavy rum cocktail, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, although there's a cocktail we're going to have in a minute called a Boulevardier.
Yeah.
And I made one with an aged rum the other day at home, and it was really tasty.
A good aged rum, much like a good tawny port, is a delightful thing.
And it tends to be really affordable, too, because yeah, people don't think of aged rum as being a fine spirit. It can be fantastic.
All right, this cup, it looks like a glass. What the heck is this?
So this is actually, I thought I'd try something that I thought it would be new for us. Apparently, it's not new for Joe.
There aren't too many drinks that are new for Joe.
But it's
look who's talking there.
It's a black velvet, which is half and half Guinness stout and sparkling wine. It's supposed to be champagne, but I made it with the sparkling wine.
Guinness stout and champagne.
And I've never had it before.
Right,
so let's
here
see.
We go.
All right.
It's pretty tasty.
It's very good.
It's a little thin.
That's very good. Now, what I have heard in some of the bar talks that I've had, people who have made black velvets for me, that it was ultimately created to mourn the death of Prince Albert.
Really?
That's the story I heard.
That wouldn't surprise me, because I'm sure Prince Albert drank his share of champagne.
There are so many myths about how drinks began. In other words, I mentioned the Harvey Wallbanger.
Right.
And there is a myth that goes back to the 50s, and there's a surfer involved. It's very strange. We talk, really, we talk about the Singapore Sling and all the permutations of its origins.
Raffles Hotel in Singapore.
Right, and there are so many origin stories that are wrong.
That's because people are drinking when the history takes place.
There you go.
So well said. All right, back to the phones we go, and Mark in Deerfield, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Great show so far. I love it. I had a question about champagne or sparkling wine, whatever you identify it as. As to its shelf life, we've gotten bottles over the years from friends, acquaintances, and don't drink a lot of it, so it's been sitting in the fridge, well chilled, but never drank, and wondering if it's still good.
Drink it now. Drink it with hot dogs tonight.
No, right now. Drink it right now.
Okay.
Sparkling wine starts deteriorating from the minute it has been bottled.
Really?
So if you have that bottle of Dom sitting in the back closet that you got from a college graduation, go buy a package
tonight
of hot dogs and drink it, the champagne with hot dogs tonight.
Very interesting. So then a wine cellar. Go ahead, Mark.
Say again, I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead.
I was just wondering if we should even bother with last year's bottle. It's pretty much.
No, turned. Last year's is okay. Last year's is okay.
Okay.
But there's a saying that the French drink their wines too young because they're impulsive. The British drink their wines too old because they're trying to impress their friends. And Americans drink wine at just the right time because we don't know any better.
There you go. All right, Mark. Well, thank you very much for the call. But then you have all these people who have wine cellars, and they never put sparkling wine in a wine cellar?
You can. Some people do like the flavor of aged wine, slightly oxidized sparkling wine. That is, the British are among that group.
Mm-hmm.
It is technically proper to drink sparkling wine as soon as it's been released.
Okay.
Now, letting it sit around for a year or two is fine, but you don't want it to sit around for years.
You don't
years
want your 80-year-old bottle of champagne.
No. No, it deteriorates. Some of it is that it loses its effervescence, but it also loses its freshness.
You had mentioned in the production, the fermentation process, that sometimes some of these bottles will sit for 8 and 10 years. Why the difference?
Because it's sitting on its lees. It's sitting inside the bottle is the pile, basically, of dead yeast cells. And what's happening is that there's, first of all, the autolyzing yeast cells, they're breaking down and adding body and flavor to the wine.
Yeah.
So the wine's getting more complex. Like if you've ever had a great champagne that was kind of bready on the nose, there's yeast in the bottle with it when it's aging. So part of it is the yeast breaking down. But also, if you think about it, the yeast is sitting there, and it was alive, but now it's dormant. And if there's a molecule of oxygen anywhere nearby, its gulp is going to eat that oxygen. So the yeast, the lees, L-E-E-S, act as a natural antioxidant inside the bottle.
How long can I keep a good bottle of champagne?
I think as long as you don't drink it.
You know, that's very snobby. Let's go to line three. Cliff in Kingston. Cliff, you're on with John Fisher.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm enjoying your the show.
Thank you.
So are we.
I've had this bottle of Corto Negro brewed in my fridge for about, this is the second year. And I haven't opened it yet.
Hot dogs tonight.
Eat them.
What was that?
Have it with dinner tonight.
It's not getting any better.
About, can I do it on New Year's Eve?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. You have a couple of days. It's been there 2 years. A couple more days aren't going to kill it.
Cocktails can I make with it?
So a nice champagne punch. Maybe you have a simple recipe for that, John.
Well, champagne punch is tricky because you have to make it at the last minute. It's going to lose its effervescence. I would say to make the cocktail we just had, the French 75, because all it is gin, lemon juice, and simple syrup, which is half water, half sugar. And as these gentlemen will attest, it's a delicious cocktail.
It's delicious, it's fairly light, and it packs a little wallop. It's very good.
Yeah, it's very nice.
All right, well, thank you for the call. Your connection's pretty bad, so we'll move it along here. And we'll take an email, and then we'll go to line one. This one is from Stephen. Can you please tell me the name and recipe of the gin drink you mentioned named after the artillery gun?
French 75.
French 75.
One serving is a half ounce of simple syrup, a half ounce of fresh lemon juice, 1 ounce of gin, and 3 ounces of champagne or sparkling wine.
And this question, and you and I have talked about this a lot. This one's from Robert. We all know that James Bond wants his drink shaken, not stirred, but what difference does it really make? You've educated me on this already.
You can tell him, right?
No, you go.
The shaking it dilutes it more. Also, it tends to make it look cloudy, so it ruins the appearance of a drink that used to be nicknamed a see-through. But it also dilutes it, which means that you lose both flavor intensity and viscosity and body. So shaking a cocktail is proper when the ingredients either are hard to mix, like with dairy, or if they taste better aerated, like fresh juice. Mm. So if there's cream or juice,
like a Singapore sling, you shake.
Yes, because there's juice in it.
You know,
so is James Bond wrong?
No, because his drink had, well, it didn't really have juice.
Gin and vodka.
Gin and vodka and Quina Lillet, which was a more bitter version of the Lillet aperitif wine that's made today. And with crushed ice, and it was supposed to be ice cold and large, and it's in Casino Royale, the first book, and I think first movie also. But it is not a gin martini. It's a different cocktail called the Vespers Martini.
And I must say that after being properly admonished by John—
I just advised.
Okay, well, we shook martinis for a long time in my house. The martinis are so much better— stirred. Now, I have to stir it a while to get it cold enough.
Of course.
But the viscosity is such a key. You get the body that you don't get when you shake it.
It should feel leaden on your palate.
Exactly. Let's go to Anna in Adams, Mass. You're on.
Hello. This year I made a Polish recipe of a rhubarb cordial, and we've been enjoying it. It's tastes like you're kind of drinking rhubarb pie with a little kick to it. But I'm wondering if you have some ideas on how to mix it into a cocktail. I've thought of a strawberry rhubarb daiquiri.
Sure.
But I wondered if you had some other ideas.
What is the base spirit that you use to make it?
It's a vodka.
Actually, my wife makes that every year. We have a rhubarb vodka. Rhubarb really likes our vegetable garden. So we have every year she chops it up and mixes it with sugar and vodka. And we just drink it on the rocks. I've made something similar to a margarita with it. So a little lime juice and enough simple syrup to make it the correct level of sweetness. You could pour it over take some strawberry puree, freeze it into ice cubes, and make strawberry ice cubes, and pour the rhubarb cordial over it.
Oh, I like that.
It's a great idea. Thank you for the call.
I was born to serve.
Okay, what do we hear?
Okay, so this is a Boulevardier. My favorite cocktail is a Negroni. There are a lot of bartenders whose favorite cocktail is a Negroni, partly because it is so complex in flavor. Also, it's relatively low alcohol because it's the only strong spirit is the gin. The vermouth is 18% alcohol, and Campari is only 26%
yep.
alcohol. And it's also technically or theoretically a drink that you can't mess up because it's 1 ounce of each ingredient.
Right.
That said, I had a messed up Negroni in Hudson one time. I will not name the bar.
Good.
But this is made with bourbon, Campari, and sweet vermouth. And I also squeezed an orange peel into it, so you should get a nice whiff of orange oil in your fine glassware here.
It smells amazing. Just an amazing scent.
Oh, I like that. That's a nice alternative to an old-fashioned.
Really is. And you know, the combination, this is also a really good vermouth that is a little bit sweeter than some sweet vermouths. This is Carpinot Antica formula. 1786, they say they invented sweet vermouth. It is around the time that sweet vermouth was created at first in Italy. So it might be the first one, but it does have a lot of individual character that makes it not necessarily the only sweet vermouth to use. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of vanilla in it.
Yeah.
But it's a great vermouth in the Campari, and there's an Evan Williams single barrel bourbon in there.
You did say that it was, I know you were talking about the other drink, but the alcohol content in this? Because it's
relatively
seems
like, low.
Really? Because it seems...
It's got a little
tons
kick.
Yeah, it has a pretty good kick.
Tons of flavor.
Yeah.
And that's the Campari and the sweet vermouth, which are, as I said, 18 and 26% alcohol, respectively.
You cannot go wrong with Campari.
It's a great, great
I like
classic.
It on the rocks straight up. I know that that's not normal.
And it's vegetarian now, too.
Is it really?
They stopped using cochineal to color it.
All the more reason why I like it. Let's go to line four, Rocco. Oh, no, Rocco and Troy. Rocco, you're on.
Did you mention sweet vermouth again?
Yeah, oh, the sweet vermouth drink. I forgot to mention
sweet
that to John.
Sweet vermouth and egg, little Campari. But I got a question.
Yeah.
How do you make, you know, New Year's Day, I have bottles of champagne that are flat. How do you make them bubbly again?
Drink it faster.
No.
No?
Throw a raisin in it.
Throw a raisin in it?
Try it. Ray, have I stared you wrong yet?
Well, I tell you what. On the last show you were on last week, you had me drink a raw egg with vermouth, and it
sweet
was good.
Vermouth, great. But I'm not kidding you. You try it.
Okay.
If you have a bottle of flat champagne or a glass of flat champagne, you throw a raisin in it, and it will become effervescent again.
Mm-hmm. Ever heard of the raisin theory there, John?
You never heard of the raisin?
I never heard of the raisin theory.
It works, and you look this up, why the raisin.
Okay.
Well, try it. Raisin in flat champagne brings back the effervescence. It's like magic.
There's a ton of sugar in there.
You were talking about Prosecco earlier.
Yeah.
And I told you this before, Ray. Prosecco is the number one drink of Italians when they eat pizza.
Really?
Yep.
I prefer dry Lambrusco.
Last year, and they asked them what they prefer to eat.
Yeah.
Drink when they're having pizza, and it is Prosecco.
I like martinis, Rocco. I think it goes great with pizza.
No, it doesn't go now with martinis, but definitely try the raisin thing.
Everything goes with pizza.
It's magic.
Well, Rocco, thank you so much. And
have a wonderful New Year's.
All right, buddy boy. We'll talk to you soon. And let's quickly go over to line six and Al in Amherst. Al, you're on.
Hey, thanks a lot. I just wanted to throw out that my favorite bubbly celebration drink is a sparkling hard cider. And particularly, you know, the hard ciders out of Spain and France, there's some really good bubblies out of there. They're not quite as alcoholic as some of the French and other champagnes, but they're delightful. And so that was one thing. I wanted to also throw out that ginger libation is a ginger beer made in Greenfield, Mass., and it is delicious. It's a great base for
I haven't tried that one.
Moscow Mules or the Dark and Stormies. It's a 9% alcohol, so it kind of makes a Dark and Stormy into a Drunken Stormy. So you got to be careful.
Yeah, have them on the show.
And if you want to try a cider that is similar to the French and the Basque Spanish ones, the Angry Orchard cidery down in south of New Paltz. I can't remember what town it's in. It's south of where Tuthill Town Distillery is. It's their experimental cidery, and he's making some amazing ciders from all natural yeasts.
Oh, terrific.
And it's a beautiful location, too.
All right, we have an email here from Peter, but it is too involved.
Right.
it is too involved, so I will give it to you, John, and maybe you can answer Peter's question. It's about the zombie, and I'd love to go with it now, but we only have about a half a minute. You have a bracer here, a restorative, so let's have a sip of that.
So this is a Bloody Mary, but the classic, the original, was called a Red Snapper. Cheers.
Okay.
One last time, happy birthday, Joe.
Happy birthday, Joe. Much. 50, you know.
The classic was called a Red Snapper. Originally, it was nicknamed a Bloody Mary at the Harry's American Bar in Paris. Pete Petio was the famous bartender during Prohibition. Came back to New York after Prohibition, worked at the St. Regis. The Astors, Mr. Astor did not like the name Bloody Mary. It was his wife's name.
Ah.
And so it was renamed the Red Snapper. So if you go to the King Cole Bar at the St. Regis, they serve a lot of Bloody Marys. And this is without horseradish because horseradish is technically a garnish.
Okay.
This is just a great balanced Bloody Mary.
Well, it's a good way to end the program. John Fisher, as always, a genius and great to have you here. Support comes from Silver Bay YMCA, Conference and Family Retreat Center on Lake George, New York. Open to all for family reunions, conferences, and personal retreats, silverbay.org. Lathrop Communities, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition, together transforming the experience of aging, lathrop.kendall.org. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts, dairy and no moo, dairy-free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more, harolds.com. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer, offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Well, thanks again to John Fisher for being here. Thanks to Joe Donahue for being here. Happy birthday, old man. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took your calls. Our producer is Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for joining us on Vox Pop this week. No Medical Monday, but Vox Pop returns on Tuesday. Have a safe and happy New Year's. Don't drink and drive. Remember that. Stand by for news.